Welcome to Unstoppable, the conversation designed to fuel your success in real estate with insights from industry leaders and rising stars who embody the unstoppable mindset. Get inspired, take action, and accelerate your growth. Your hosts are joining you now. Back to Unstoppable. Joining us today is Rebecca Holton, CEO of LJ Hooker Property Experience Group. She's an award-winning leader known for driving growth, building strong teams, and setting the standard in Perth real estate. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi, ladies. How are we? It's always weird to say hi on a podcast when we've said hi earlier.
I know.
And then it's but thanks for having me on. I'm really excited for this little passion project of yours. Fantastic.
We're very excited too. And I had the pleasure of meeting you last week at Rise and hearing you share your story on stage, which I thought was incredible. And of course, immediately made a beeline for you the second that you walked off, thinking I have to get this woman to speak for us on the Unstoppable podcast. Very nice. So there's so much that we want to chat to you about, but I think what would be really interesting to start off with is just a little bit about you, so that those that are on the Sydney real estate scene that perhaps don't know as much about Perth kind of have an understanding of all of the fantastic things you've done over the last few years.
Yeah, so I am a mid-40-year-old mother of young children who has been in the real estate, 25, almost 26 years now. So it's something I did straight away. And I've always been with LJ Hooker. I'm a very rare breed of person who has stayed under the same brand for the entire time. But yeah, I think, look, we've grown a really good business over here in Perth. We've got three offices, about 107 staff, I think was the last count, just about to tip over 4,000 management, property under management, and a sales team of about 30 odd salespeople. So that has grown exponentially over the last 5 years, I would say. And I'm happy to dig deeper into that with you guys as well. But that's where we are. I sit in the CEO role. I've got a business partner who's an incredible human. He's a real legacy piece to our business. But now, you know, I am pretty much running solo on the growth and the trajectory of the business, with him still advising me, but not day to day, not in the business. Yeah, and trying to raise two very energetic boys at the same time and be a mum, which, you know, comes with that.
2025 business ownership, real estate leader, and mum. Each of those are full-time jobs on their own. So not sure how you manage it all. That's probably a whole nother podcast. One of the things I really wanted to talk to you about was I heard you share your story of burnout last week. Mm-hmm. And you know how, you know, that year kind of left you in a heap on the floor.
Yeah.
And you have put, you know, come through the other side. I'd love to know more about that and the how, and still able to run three businesses. If that's not superpowers, I'm not sure what is.
Yeah. And I know your podcast is called Unstoppable, and you think you are until you're not, right? And I think that's something, upon reflection, I've been able to really process, is what were the signs and why didn't I see them? And there's two sides to that. So there were heaps of signs. Like, there were crazy signs that I was coming in, I was getting myself in trouble, like physically, mentally, and emotionally, I think were the three things that I could look back at and say, well, you know, you always know what's out of balance. You know, you feel like if you've eaten too much stuff, you just back off the food and do a few more walks, or there's kind of levers in your life that you can pull and get things balanced. But I think when it comes to that emotional and mental state, it's really hard to pull the levers and to have an effect quickly. So yeah, it was a pretty hard time. We had a lot going on. I had a lot going on with my health. You know, I was told within 6 months, like I was told that I had melanoma, and that stopped me in my tracks, as it would, mm-hmm. as a young, you know, I was 40, 41, had young kids. Luckily it was quite early, so we got on top of that. But then 3 months later, to go back for a check and then to find out I had melanoma, a second melanoma, that was probably the one that scared me the most, because you, once you know that cancer lives in your body, it's a big anxiety that you hold. Anyway, we got that early and we got on top of that. But then my mum, about 2 months after that, had a massive stroke, and we thought we were going to lose her, which we didn't. We didn't. But then she became a dependent on me as well, which my mum was the person that I could turn to and get help with everything. She just lived around the corner. She was really great with the kids, and she was also a real estate agent. So lots of, lots of mental stuff I could dump on her, and that couldn't happen anymore. She Mum couldn't speak for months. She had to go through some serious rehab. Super proud of where she's come to now. And then, and then on top of all of that, we were driving the business hard. Like, I was in full hustle mode with the business. And I'm it, it just it because I was driving the growth, and I think this was the biggest lesson I learned, is when you're driving growth, if you're not sitting in a true leadership position, so if you're still doing too much, as in the day-to-day stuff, that when you're driving that growth, that is just adding, bolting on pressure onto you as a doer. And so every time I was like, okay, I need to recruit five salespeople in this office, that was, I need to do that. I need to be going out. I need to find those people. I need to, and all the interviews and the onboarding. And then it was just compounding. Or there was a chance to do an acquisition, and we always say yes to the acquisition, and then it's like, okay, well, now I have to do the due diligence and sign all the managements, and like it just compounds, because that's when I think you're sitting in a management role, not a leadership role. And that's what I was. And my business coach at the time said to me, you are connecting your worth and your value to your busyness, and that can't happen. And that was probably a real pivotal thing that was said to me. So if I felt busy, I felt like I was adding value. And that was in mum life, school life, wife life, everything. I felt like if I was busy, that was my value, and that I could take so much on, and I was superhuman and all the things. Right?
That's a really,
Incredible.
I've never heard it explained in that way
Yeah.
before, but it's like a light bulb actually hearing you say that.
Yeah.
It's so true. We get so real estate leaders, I think in general, or those we refer to as real estate leaders,
Yeah.
are they really leading or are they managing and they're doing all of the work and trying to lead it? And they're two different jobs, right? No wonder people get burnt out
They are
and
two different jobs. Yeah, but I think more importantly, that it and unfortunately, it's us women who put that on us. We feel like if we're busy, like you're both working mums, and you get up in the morning, and before the rest of the house is up, you've got six lunch boxes made, the school uniforms are ironed, the bags are packed, and you're doing that because you want to go to a work meeting early, and you've got guilt. Like, what the fuck? How does that happen? And that's what, and I've got a really great husband who's very he's very he supports everything. He's fantastic. But we are wired different. We are wired that if we want to go to the 7:30 breakfast meeting, well, we have to get up 2 hours earlier to get everything done. So your husband or whoever's looking after the kids can just get up and have it easier, and then you feel okay to go to that meeting. If that was flipped and the husband had an early meeting, do you think they would get, and it's not because if you asked them to, they definitely would. But naturally, it's not ingrained for them to get up 2 hours early and have everything done. So you can just get up and have a nice leisurely breakfast with your kids.
This is such an interesting conversation because it's something that we have a women's mentoring group in our network, She Sells, and we actually had a retreat at the end of last year, and the mum guilt was so real for me
Oh, yeah.
last year, so
It's,
real.
it,
I
yeah.
couldn't, like, I just thought, oh my God. And one of our female business owners, we were all talking about our challenges. What was a challenge we wanted to try and overcome before the end of the year? And I said, it's the mum guilt. I love my job and I'm not giving that up for the world. And I just don't want to feel guilty about then the mum part that I might, not be doing. And she looked at me and she said, darling, you're going to feel guilty no matter what it is. That is motherhood for the
It's
next
built into
18
us.
years of
Yeah.
your life. There is going to be a bit of guilt.
Yeah.
Just roll with it for the next 6 months and then, 6 months at a time. It was actually the best advice she could have given me.
And I think, look, I think you're right. It is built into us, and you just you, it's like a swinging pendulum, and you go wherever the guilt feels less. So, you know, I often say to our team, like, if I want to get my hair done or just something that's not dollar productive or family productive or all the things that you think you should be doing all the time, I say, well, you know, if I went on the weekend and it took me 2 hours away from the kids, how does that sit with me right now? Or if I went during some office hours, how does that sit? And what it, where of the guilt is less is where I go. And that's just naturally how we do it. But yeah, I think that just gives a bit of context around why I ended up on the bathroom floor in paralyzed anxiety, is because it everything compounds. And you know, and I think we say we are all guilty of saying things to other working parents, like, wow, how do you fit it all in? And whilst we think that is helping the person, it's actually, because I think when someone says to me, how do you fit it all in? I feel really judged. Because if it's a mum at school saying, how do you fit it all in? I think they must think I'm slacking off in parent life. But if it's someone at work who says, oh, how do you fit it all in? I feel like they're saying, well, you can't do your job yet, right? So I've really stopped, checked myself from saying that to other people. I always say, that's incredible. You are doing amazing things, instead of asking, how do you do it? Because it's not, people aren't asking how, they're just trying to work out what you're not doing.
And I
Just,
think it's
you
to
know
add,
what I
yeah,
mean?
just to add to that, I think those playground conversations can cut you like a knife.
Oh.
And, you know, I can only speak because my kids have come the other side. They're much older, they're not as dependent. And I think those compliments that people used to give you as a working mother weren't necessarily a compliment at the time. So I definitely, you know, kudos to you for being able to recognize that. Too much at the time, you know, is when you're sitting on that bathroom floor, something has to change. And I'm curious to really know how do you protect your time now, and how is it different, Beck version 2.2, once you picked yourself up off the bathroom floor? What would you do different now?
I think it's Beck version 200.2, by the way. It's just, you know,
200.
like there's so many things that happen, but I have to give my husband a bit of, my husband turned to me that morning and I'll never forget it. And he said to me, because I was just trying to drag myself up off the floor and put my suit on and just hustle
And
through it, right?
continue, yeah.
And he said to me, he turned to me, he said, you don't have to get off the floor. Like he said it with such conviction that I went,
What a beautiful man.
who am I trying to prove this to? Like, it was really a moment of, you know what? If that was one of my team members on the floor, and I get lots of calls in the mornings from people having a hard time, or they need some, just some, you know, like mental health is ripe in our industry. I
No.
think it's ripe in the world, but in our industry. And I love nothing more than getting a call and someone saying I'm struggling, because it means they're reaching out. I think that's,
Yeah.
you know, that's the key. And I sort of sat back and thought, well, if that was one of my team members reaching out to me saying I'm crippled over with anxiety, I'm overwhelmed, what would I say to them? I wouldn't tell them to put their suit on and hustle through it. Like, that's the worst thing you could do. So why was I telling myself? So what I did, you know, it was a really slow morning, and there was lots of tears, and I just had to really sit with how I was feeling and what was going on, and it just turned out that, as I unpacked it, and I worked really closely with a business coach, and I worked really closely with my husband, and I didn't see a psychologist or a counselor. I didn't think that for me, that wasn't at that time the right thing. I had to sort out why I was putting so much pressure on myself in this business. And as it turned out, I was putting way too much emphasis on bottom line and not enough emphasis on support for myself. So I didn't have a EA at the time. I didn't have all these people that someone at my level and the size of the business should have helping them. Because I, as a CEO and reporting to a board, the bottom line was the most important thing to everybody. So instead of putting on, you know, $100,000 EA, I just did more. And while the business looked phenomenal on a balance sheet, my inside my head wasn't.
Yeah, right. And so that's really interesting. What do you think it takes to be not collapsing on the bathroom floor, hopefully people can learn from you and not have to go to that breakdown point to actually make that shift. But what do you think is that kind of turning point or mindset shift people need to make? And when? How do you know when is the right time to shift from manager, operator, jack of all trades into CEO and leader of my business?
Yeah, so I think it depends on where you want to take the business. Businesses can be super profitable at different levels, you know, and we're going through a bit of a growing, I call it growing pains. There's always growing pains with growth, and it's just normal. Like you get to a point where your business is at a certain size and you can afford to pay some more leadership staff or some, you know, you can hold an extra staff member to take the stress. Like you have a bit of freedom around it. But then you start growing a bit more, and you that extra person or that leadership, you kind of get stuck between we need someone, but we can't afford someone. Or, you know, or the bottom line won't allow that to happen. And I'm a strong believer now that you put the person on and the growth comes. It's like build it and they will come. We've done it enough times now where we go, you know, we always try and keep our business sitting with some capacity so our growth doesn't hurt us. Because when growth starts to hurt a business, everyone's growth mindset will change. You need your people. If, you know, we're completely obsessed with growth in our business, and that's what we talk about, the obsession with growth. And it's growth of the person, growth of the business, growth of the numbers, growth of it. It's not just bottom line growth, it's everyone's growing at the same time.
Well, if you focus on the growth of the person, the end result is the bottom line growth.
Right,
I
it is, yeah.
suppose, I suppose my next question was what drives you the most? And it's not necessarily, I think that what, you said something really important about the people in the morning. You might get those calls from the working mums that, are having those challenging moments. I want to know, did motherhood change your leadership style?
Yeah, look, I think
It would have.
it changed my leadership style. So many things happened around when I had the kids. I had the kids in COVID. Well, Parker was born just before. Grayson was born during COVID. So that alone, with becoming a working mum, the whole landscape changed, and it was more about. But I was very quick to adapt. Where we live here in Perth, a lot of our staff have fly in, fly out partners. So their partners will be away for 2 weeks, back for one. And so we always had a really flexible mindset around that. Like when I remember a girl coming to me once and saying, "Can I work 2 weeks on, 1 week off? But the 2 weeks I'll work 14 days straight. And then when my partner's home, I want the 7 days off." So out of the 21 days, she was working 14. Out of the 21 days, it would have been 15 days. If it was on a normal five and two, right? So it actually didn't matter for production. The problem is the clients who can't contact them for the 7 days. So we had to really sort of think about flexibility around how could we make that work, because 50% of our workplace has fly in, fly out partners. And if you want to be a business attraction business, you need to be able to have those different. So we always had a flexible mindset around working. But I still feel like, and I'll probably, you might get a bit of hate mail on your podcast, but I still feel like that it has to be earned. You
Of
know, I
course.
don't feel like you can walk into a business, and unfortunately we're seeing it a lot now where, you know, different generations are walking in, and we did a lot of work at Generations last week, Jackie, which I thought was great. But different generations are walking in and saying, well, I only want to work 3 days a week, but I want to be paid full time. And if I could work one of those days from home, and, you know, and it's like this long list, which you would be okay with if you were a proven staff member. And I just think that's got to, I think flexible workplaces are incredible and we all need it, but I think it's got to be earned, not entitled. And that's just where I think we've got a bit of a gap.
Yeah, I actually tend to agree with that. And I don't know if it's strange hearing three women with kids that probably would be, if we were all going to be employees somewhere, would probably all be asking, for flexibility. I totally agree with flexibility. I don't subscribe to work-life balance. I don't think it exists. Balance implies that it's equal this, equal this, equal this, and it's just not possible. It just has to blend and integrate together. Flexibility might not necessarily mean being able to work a day from home, It might be that you just want to know that when you've got the Mother's Day assembly morning tea, because mums are always available at morning tea, but dads get Father's Day breakfast, FYI. Not an affair
This
of mine
is
at
so
all.
true.
But that you can just duck out to the school assembly or watch them at that running race or whatever it might be. But I think all of that comes from earned trust. I think that there are people that, in the length of time the three of us have been in the industry, we probably have that track record from previous employment to be able to demonstrate that we are worth that bet. But there are other people that are brand new into the industry that have not worked a day, in a real estate agency that want that. But the trouble that you have with that sort of stuff, what you learn in the earlier stages of your career from actually physically being present in an office, sitting there, listening to your colleagues, listening to your leaders talk on the phone. I mean, my most invaluable lessons in real estate came from hearing what everybody else did.
Oh, 100%.
Years and years and years and years of experience.
And that's right. It's more, if I was headhunting someone, I would be headhunting them because they've got proven record. And so you can offer whatever they want, really. But yeah, it is more, I think there just needs to be a bit more of a balance in the workplace. Like the workplaces still need people to be in them. They can't be empty offices. It doesn't work. But I also think, we've gone off track a bit here, but when it comes to burnout, I guess if I was an employee at the moment and I was feeling burnt out, I think sometimes working from home's not the right thing for you either. Like you've got to get to the core root of why you're feeling burnt out. And I've got someone at the moment who is not doing well. She's got some mental health problems, and she asked if she could work from home on Friday and then today. And I've just called her today and said to her, I don't think working from home is the right thing for you because she doesn't focus and she's not as productive at home and she's quite new to the role. So she asks a lot of questions in the office and she gets a lot of answers. She has that environment. And when I spoke to her this morning, she said, you're right. She said, I'm so far behind in everything because I'm just overwhelmed and there's no one helping me. She's on her own at home. So I said, right, let's get you back in the office. Maybe even just do half a day in the office tomorrow and see how you feel. And she was fine with that. But, that comes down to leadership. And we talk about management and leadership. I think as a leader, you need to be able to know where your team's at, but not have to deal with where they're at. Like, I think that you need to allow the managers to do that, but you need to be very aware of where everyone's at. And I think that's the difference between definitely me as a leader and my in management team. It's around, I've got a very strong awareness of where they're all at, but I don't need to deal with it. Like that would be,
Granular level, yeah.
yeah,
You've got
that
people for
I
that.
can help my management and leadership team, with guiding them to deal with it. But I just need to be able to sit in that space where I'm like, I know that person's not doing great. I'm just going to put in a call because that will mean a lot to them. But I don't want to get in the way of what's being put in place to help them. Like it's just that try not to be, get in the way of the management. But as a leader, it's around, well, who can I bring into the business next? What does that look like? It's getting rid of the stuff.
I'd love to know, mental health aside, because I think that's a conversation that everybody should be having. What is the conversation that the industry should be having, but we're not?
That's a really good question. I think, well, you know what? I think we've got a big issue with the age of our business owners across the board. I think if you were to look around, and I was speaking to Joel from RE/MAX and a couple of other, the franchise leaders over the last couple of days, the average age of a business owner is quite old. And then if you dug a bit further and said, well, and I know succession planning has been a buzzword forever when I was young, but who is actually doing it and how are they doing it? Because I feel like we're losing a lot of people in the in our offices because they don't know if there's an opportunity to succeed the business. Like it's everyone talks about it. Everyone says, oh yeah, I've got a succession plan. Their succession plan is to sell. It's not to grow someone or, and then, so I think that's probably the conversation around it's not necessarily the top salesperson that's going to be the best to run your business. It's like it could be anyone, but it's not always that $2 million, $3 million writer. They probably don't want it. to be fair. So I think that conversation is definitely, but I also think, you know, we talk a lot in our business about mental load, and it's the all the stuff that's going on that you don't see. And I think that's not just, you know, their home life. It's more around, you know, if I was to look at my EA's role and I just see the work she's doing for me. But when I talk to her about whatever else she's got going on, it's like a lot. It's a whole nother load of stuff that she's dealing with. But just because I don't see it on my emails or my phone doesn't mean it's not there.
I think you're aware of it because you've been there and you've carried that extra load. I'm curious to know, how do you protect your time now coming through the other side? I mean, surely you must. I've sat on the sideline and watched your extraordinary success and growth over the years with the time that I've known you as well. And I think you must be proud of yourself, Beck. You've done an extraordinary job to grow such an empire.
I'm proud of I'm proud of the business, I'm proud of myself, I'm proud of the team, proud of my kids. There's a lot to be proud of, but at what point I still, you know, you still get when you're asked to speak on stage, you still think, well, I'm actually not successful yet. You know, like I often think that. I think, why are they asking me to be on this podcast? Like, I'd rather listen to someone else. But when you do get a chance to tell your story, or, you know, I spoke at the Stone Conference down in Tasmania a couple of weeks ago with all their leaders and actually told the story about the business growth. It wasn't my story, it was the business. And then I was like, oh, it's actually a good business. That's not a bad business. But in terms of protecting my time, I'm like a ninja with my
Are
time.
you?
I
And is
am
that home work balance,
everywhere.
tech time?
So my husband and I have a shared diary of which my EA runs. And so he can't have all of my stuff in his diary because it overwhelmed him to even look at it. He's like, I can't, just don't do that. So we've set it up differently now where there's only appointments that he needs to know about if it's, you know, a time. Like if I'm, you know, I don't know, if I've got a physio appointment, but it's at the same time as a swimming lesson, he knows that he's doing the swimming lesson, whatever it might be. So I don't book any appointments before 10 o'clock in the morning. I have a really strict rule with my EA not to put anything in my diary before 10 because I found as a person, I'm a lot better if I'm a morning person, so I get up in the morning and do a lot. But if I have a very relaxed time with my kids in the morning where we have brekkie together, get them and I get them out the door, I can go to work in a much better state. And I'm not rushing to get to one of the offices. So 10 o'clock's my happy start appointments. And then I really won't book anything past 3 o'clock, to be honest. So I hustle hard from 10 till 3 in whatever business I need to be in. And I don't have a set, I'm in this office this day, this office that day. I've got leadership team who are, there's always leaders in each office, but they rotate as well. And then I go where I know I'm needed. You know where you need to be or who you need to meet with or what you need to do. And then we just have an energy day on a Tuesday, every second Tuesday in the city office where everybody's in. So we can bang out lots of meetings and
And
I
when
like
you're
that.
home, is the phone off?
Well, I'd like to think it is probably not as much as it should be after hearing some of the speakers at the conference last week, but I will still, so I've always prided myself. I find that my best leadership currency is speed of response. You know, that's something that everyone has always said. It doesn't matter where you are, what you're doing, you always respond. Now, that doesn't mean my phone's always stuck to my hip. It just means if I can just say to that person, I'm on it, I'll find it, I just send that. But I'm trying to not make that so much my currency because I'm finding when I'm trying to bring leaders up through the business, if they don't respond as quick as me, that team still come to me. So I'm really trying to make that, just find some boundaries around that. But in terms of, so Fridays I work from home. I'm at home with my 4-year-old on a Friday, and he knows that in the morning, mum will do some work for a couple of hours and then we'll swim in the pool or we'll go to the beach. And then I'll just do a couple of hours before we pick Parker up from school. And he's fine. He'll do puzzles and stuff in the office. But then, come 3 o'clock Friday, I don't touch my phone until the Monday.
Wow.
I need to take a leaf out of the Rebecca Fulton time management book because I feel like my phone is And it's not like there's a crisis that I need to respond
No.
to. It's just a struggle to put it down because it's on your body, like, 24/7 in the 4.5 days prior.
I think it's really good to I am, my team are probably listening. There's three people in my team I'll take a call from at any time. And that's like, I know if they're calling me, it's a real issue. If it's anyone else, I let it go. I always let it go through to voicemail, or I just send them a text, like, I'm in a meeting, can you text? And by the time I either get back to them, or actually, by the time I get back to them, 95% of the time they're like, oh, don't worry, I got it sorted. So it's just allowing them to think
For themselves.
for themselves. And I'm like, great. And they're like, do you want to know what it is? I'm like, no, not if you sorted it. That's fantastic. So it's just trying to be clever with your time, and it is a hard thing. There's only so many hours in the day, and as we found out, so many Sundays left in your life. So do you want to spend that? And I'm not on the tools anymore. I still call a few auctions here and there, but nothing crazy. So it's like, do I really want to spend Saturday and Sunday looking at my phone in case there's an issue? No. And I think one of the best things you can do is take yourself down the beach, swim in the ocean, because you can't have your phone on you, or swim in the pool, or do something where you're not just sitting there with your phone next to you waiting for it to. All my notifications are turned off all the time.
Actually,
I don't like that.
is this post burnout or?
No, actually, my notifications haven't been turned on since I did a digital cleanse with
Sure.
Anne McLean, actually. They just challenged us 1 week to turn your notifications off, and I've never turned them back on. And that allows me to control when I want to see things, not just red dots everywhere and, popping up on my phone. But for me, it's more just being, my kids have definitely. Like, they're coming to an age too where they want to have an iPad, and it's going to be very hard for my husband and I to say no if we're sitting there on our screens all the time. So we're just trying to consciously work out, what does that look like? We all saw adolescence, well, I saw adolescence, and that scared the absolute living hell out of me. So now I'm reading a lot of books around, well, how do you control that? Because it's not, we don't have it yet, but I know it's not far off. They're using iPads at school, and I just want to know that we're going to have a good environment around that. And that's definitely us not being on our screens in front of them all the time.
Kudos to you.
Yeah, that's going to be, I think lots of real estate parents are all going to struggle with that one. I know that that's the same in our household too. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Beck. Lots of invaluable insights there that I'm sure that we'll want to get you back on again to dive
Oh,
into
thanks for
something because
having
there's
me.
so much to unpack there. So thank you so much for joining us today. And until next time.
Yeah, thanks,
Thank you,
ladies.
Beck.
Bye.
Congratulations on your success. Thank
Thank
you.
you.